Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Chapter 2, The Lord in the Heart, text 9 and 10.
Prasanna Bhaktram Narinaya Tikshanam.
Prasanna Bhaktram Narinaya Tikshanam.
Kadamba Kinjoka Pishanga Vasasam.
Kadamba Kinjoka Pishanga Vasasam.
Prasanna Ratna Hiranmayangadam. Spuran Maharatna Kedita Kundalam. Prasanna Bhaktam Narinaya Tikshanam. Kadamba Kinjoka Pishanga Vasasam. Lasan Maharatna Heran Mayangadam. Spuran Maharatna Kirita Kundalam. Prasanna Bhaktam Narinaya Tikshanam. Kadamba Kinjoka Pishanga Vasasam. Prasan Maharatna Heran Mayangadam. Spuran Maharatna Kirita Kundalam. Prasanna expresses happiness. Bhaktram. Now. Nalina Ayata. Spread like the petals of a lotus. Ikshanam. Eyes. Kadamba. Kadamba flower. Kinjoka.
Saffron.
Pishanga, yellow. Vasasam, garments. Lasat, hanging. Maharatna, valuable jewels. Karanmaya, made of gold. Angadam, ornament. Spurat, glowing. Maharatna, valuable jewels. Kedita, headdress. Kundalam, earrings. Translation. His mouth expresses his happiness. His eyes spread like the petals of a lotus. And his garments, yellowish like the saffron of a kadamba flower, are bedecked with valuable jewels. His ornaments are all made of gold, set with jewels. And he wears a glowing headdress and earrings. Text 10. His lotus feet are placed over the whorls of the lotus-like hearts of great mystics. On his chest is a Kaushubha jewel engraved with a beautiful calf. And there are other jewels on his shoulders. His complete torso is garlanded with fresh flowers. Purport. The ornaments, flowers, clothing, and all other decorations on the transcendental body of the Personality of Godhead are identical with the body of the Lord. None of them are made of material ingredients. Otherwise, there could be no chance of their decorating the body of the Lord. As such, in the Parabhyoma, spiritual varieties are also distinguished from the material variegatedness.
Om Agena Chimananasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Mritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srinivasa Gaurabhavrinda
Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram
This chapter is describing the intermediate stage of realizing the Absolute Truth. The preceding chapter described the universal form of the Lord, and you heard about the great benefits that human society could get just by seeing the whole universe as the body of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Of course, Krishna doesn't have actually a form made of the universe. But he can show that form as he did to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna requested him so that people would have no doubt who Krishna is. Arjuna, of course, is satisfied with the two-handed original form of the Lord, but he was concerned that persons would try to declare themselves as supreme. And now you have an easy test. If you think you are the Supreme Absolute Truth, please show your universal form as Krishna did. But that universal form, the Virata Rupa, as you may have heard, is actually imaginary. But it's a bona fide imagination. For those who are not attracted to the Shyam Sundar, Govinda, the personal form of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Krishna says, all right, you can visualize me as the universe. You can visualize the whole universe as my body. So it is an authorized visualization. Or put another way, it's an authorized imagination. For the sake of unfortunate persons making spiritual advancement. You're so attached to matter, you're so attached to thinking the cosmos, this tiny universe is so great. All right, see me as the universe. Imagine, visualize me as the universe. And in that preceding chapter, we heard so much about the benefits that human society would get if they would just see the universe, the cosmos, as the body of the Supreme. Now we have to remember, seeing the universe as the body of the Supreme is not simply some kind of religious belief. In other words, oh, I believe the universe is the body of the Supreme, the sun is his eye, and so on and so forth, and then you just do what you like with the universe. In other words, the universal form is teaching you to recognize proprietorship and act accordingly. Just like if I recognize that something belongs to you, I'll ask your permission before using it. So that's the whole idea of the Virata Rupa. To recognize that everything is the energy of the Supreme and act accordingly. It's not just some idle meditation in which you visualize the whole universe as the body of the Supreme and you just do whatever you like. That is not the Virata Rupa system. So that is the preliminary stage of God realization. As the Bhagavatam says, the first step in God realization. And some people are just stuck on that level. Some persons haven't even got to that level. I remember one song that they would teach us, the little kids in church on Sunday. Who made the mountains? Who made the seas? Somebody bigger than you and me. So, that's something. It's a beginning. And as I may have explained before, I remember as a 14-year-old being sent away to school in the mountains, very beautiful mountains. And so I remember the first days there, I would ride my bicycle into the mountains, and they were so beautiful, and I was thinking, just see, surely there must be a supreme being. Look at this artistry. The mountains in the autumn season, the leaves are all changing colors, and you can see the mountains, the clouds, the valleys. Surely, there must be supreme absolute truth. Then, after 2 years of high-powered education, when I was 16, one priest came to speak to the boys. It was an all-boys school. Although he hated it, it was an all-boys school. And you had to go to church once a week. So, the priest came. He was an American version of the Anglican priest, Episcopal priest, they called in the USA. And he began to lecture. Look at the mountains. Look at the valleys. Look at the sky. Everyone can see that there is God. My friends and I were sitting, you know, in the church. We just started laughing amongst each other. How unscientific. So that's what, you know, 2 years of high-powered education did. What is this sentiment? How unscientific. As Srila Prabhupada points out in his purports, even the Aborigine has some sense of there being a supreme power. It's natural. It's natural to recognize that unless you have been distorted by atheistic education. And then, because you've been distorted, you can't properly think of what is the cause of all causes. Farmers, those dependent on agriculture, have a much easier time because they're right there with nature. They see the rhythms of nature. Farming needs to work with the rhythms of nature. You can see how dependent you are on nature. But, of course, most people, almost everyone, doesn't farm. They're packed up into cities, as we often point out when speaking at universities. At the present moment in human society, more than 50% of the population lives in cities. And the number is just going to go up. The percentage is simply going to increase. So what happens when you're living in the city? You may not think about it, but what actually happens? You think that all your natural services are provided by the city. Where does water come from? It comes through the pipe. You pay a bill. And you pay for water and milk. Yeah. Where does food come from? Food comes from the supermarket. What happens to your waste? Your waste go down the toilet as sewage, and the rubbish is collected by the city? What about the air? Air? Oh, you mean the air conditioner? Air is regulated by the air conditioner. If it gets too cold, you turn on the heater. It's all about electricity and public utilities and paying your bills to the city and so on and so forth. In other words, we have been completely alienated from our natural surroundings. We can't even recognize how dependent we are on nature. Therefore, it's even harder to understand that there is a supreme cause of all causes, sarva-karma and karma, because they're so out of touch. Everything is artificial. What do men and women do? They use contraceptives. That's what the activity is all about. That's not about having children. It's all about just getting some temporary stimulation. That's all. So in this way, our demoniac society has reached into every aspect of human activity and twisted it, perverted it, distorted it. Where does healing come from? Healing comes from the chemist, the pharmacy. So in this way, because people have been so isolated and alienated from nature, even the feeling of awe and reverence that an Aborigine in the jungle or out back has when looking at nature. People today are below that level, yet they think they're so advanced. So what is our situation? Our situation is that we have been falsely flattered. How is that? We have been flattered that we live in an advanced society. It's all flattery, but, and we accept it. You know, sometimes devotees flatter each other.
Oh, Prabhu, you are Patita Pavana.
You're doing such wonderful service. Of course, the devotee wants to learn how to appreciate other devotees. That's nice. And as you start to appreciate other devotees, you get better and better at it. But in the beginning, it may sound a little clumsy. And you just say things like, "Oh, Prabhu, you are so great." Gradually, as you learn the art, you become more and more artistic and expert in glorifying devotees. You have to start somewhere. So, in the beginning, it may sound like flattery. But when we look at what we think of human civilization today, it is complete flattery. We have been flattered. You live in an advanced society. You live in a society in which all the inconveniences have been eradicated. You pay your taxes, you pay your GST, and what do you get back in return? You get easy living. This is flattery. And everything basically that you need to know has been figured out by the scientists, by the lecturers at the university. Now, you may not know, but they know. They know. Don't expect that you can understand, because there's so many things out there that you have to try to comprehend. But someone else knows. You can be sure they know. Of course, if you ever would take the time to analyze what they supposedly know, you'll find zero. It's bluffing. That was Srila Prabhupada's constant point. You're being bluffed. In the future, we will know. And you've been flattered. How great your situation is that you live in such a society. You could be some refugee from Somalia or Rwanda, but no, you live in this society. You might have been born here, or you might have got the supreme benediction of getting PR. Either way, once your Siddha, whether it's Nitya Siddha, you're born in Australia, or Sharda Siddha, you went through the PR process. Once you're here, and you can't be kicked out. You are so fortunate. So, we have been flattered. We have been bluffed and flattered. And therefore, our natural tendency to appreciate that there is a supreme power in nature has been destroyed. Now, simply understanding that there has been a supreme power in nature is not the end of God realization. It's not the end of understanding the Supreme Absolute Truth. It's the beginning. You have to begin somewhere. So therefore, in the second canto, the chapter is the first step in God realization. Understand that everything in the cosmos is connected to the Supreme. And meditate in that way. Conceptualize in that way. When you see the sun, just don't think, oh, the sun is somewhere up there. You think that is the eye of the Supreme Absolute Truth. When you see the mountains, you think, oh, those are the bones of the Supreme Absolute Truth. And that way, you can elevate yourself. So the Bhagavatam explains that just by this preliminary phase of God realization, there'll be peace in society. Just by taking up this very preliminary, rudimentary understanding of the Supreme Absolute Truth, society will become peaceful. Now, in this chapter, you're at the intermediate stage, Paramatma, Super Soul. And you're getting all the details of what the yogis see who meditate on the Super Soul in the heart. As you know from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannidhisto matasmitir ghanam apovanam cha. I'm situated in everyone's heart. And from me comes all knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So in so many places in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that He is there in the core of your being, alongside you. As the Upanishads also say, Dva Suparna Sayuja Sikaya. There are two birds on the tree of the body. One is the bird that's doing things, acting. The other bird is the witnessing bird. So the super soul is witnessing. There's no question of being able to do anything in private. Just like some countries in the world, wherever you turn, there's a video camera recording everything. There are countries in Asia like that. Everywhere, the video camera's recording everything. Subways, public places, the shopkeepers have video cameras recording everything goes on inside the shop and right outside their shop. People are starting to become accustomed to the fact that they are under constant surveillance. Your emails, your phone calls, everything can be observed. Everything can be, all the data can be saved for future reference. So, of course, you may say, so what if they're watching everything? So what if I'm under surveillance and all my phone calls and emails and all my activities on the internet, it's all being stored somewhere. Someone can track whatever I'm doing. So what? I have nothing to hide. I'm not doing anything. I'm not doing anything wrong. So similarly, the devotee feels, yes, Krishna's in my heart. Very good. I've got nothing to fear. But someone who is rebellious against the Supreme Absolute Truth can't stand the fact that there might be the Supreme Personality God in their heart. They become very angry about that. You remember Kamsa's advisors telling him he should take action. He should not be merciful to Vasudeva's newborns. And in fact, not only he should not be merciful to Vasudeva's newborns, he should not be merciful to any newborns in the whole vicinity, because any child anywhere could be Vishnu. So, Kamsa's demoniac advisors urge him, take action, take action. You have nothing to fear. Why? Why not? Brahma? Isn't he the supreme being of the universe? But Kamsa's advisors told him, what is Brahma doing? He's in meditation. he won't be concerned with all the evil things you do. What about Shiva? Shiva, he's off somewhere performing austerities. He won't interfere with him. What about Vishnu? Vishnu? Vishnu is in everyone's heart. He's trapped there and can't come out. So that was the conception of Kamsa's advisors. They have some knowledge. Yes, Vishnu's in the heart, but you know, he's locked up there. He's imprisoned there. The super soul can't come out. You have nothing to fear. Do your demoniac program. Everything will be fine. The first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam explains, Shindatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Priya Chasto Yavadani Vidunoti Sahitsukam. When you hear about Krishna, what happens? When you hear that kata, then the super soul in your heart cleanses the desire for material enjoyment from your heart. Sometimes you may wonder, how will I ever get over all these material desires? I think I've made some progress, and I see there's more dirt I have to clean. I get rid of that, and I see there's more. When will it ever end? But the Bhagavatam explains that Sri Krishna is the super soul in everyone's heart. When you hear about him, he reciprocates. He's not lazy in your heart. He reciprocates by cleansing the desire for material enjoyment from your heart. Now, bear in mind, not everyone wants the desire for material enjoyment to disappear from their heart. Well, if that goes, what will be left of me? What do you do? Isn't the Supreme supposed to help us in our material enjoyment? Isn't that why we're doing puja? Isn't that why we're giving donations? Put a little something in the hundi. Save up your brass coins, put them in the hundi. You keep the paper and electronic money, and you give the deity the brass coins. In that way, we'll be able to get blessings for material enjoyment. Many persons throughout the world think that is the purpose of Dharma. The purpose of Dharma is to get the blessings of the Supreme so you can enjoy material life. Bhagavatam tells us something else. Right in the beginning of Bhagavatam, everything is clarified. Dharma projita kaityavatra. Padamo namasvaranam satam. Projita. Sweeps out, kicks out the door. Any motivation to perform Dharma for material benefit, whether it's Jnana Yoga, mystic yoga, karmic activity, whatever, out the door it goes. This is how fortunate we are to be in touch with Srimad Bhagavatam. Paramo Namatsaranam Satam. It's actually for the Paramahansas, Srimad Bhagavatam, for those who are not envious. You might say, well, what's the big deal about not being envious? I'm not feeling envy just at this moment. Right now, at this moment, no one has anything better than me. But, yes, it's just a matter of time. That's the way material life is. It's a matter of time before you run into someone whom you start to envy. Because it's the nature of material existence that someone will always be stronger than you. Someone will be smarter than you. Someone will have more money than you. Someone will be more beautiful than you. And so on and so forth. Someone will be more famous than you. That's the way it is. So it's just a matter of time before you become envious. And even if you're not envious of anyone in this world, you have to deal with the root cause of material existence, our envy of Krishna. Some people have a hard time understanding that. What do you mean by this envy of Krishna? I'm not envious of the Supreme. Yeah. Govinda can do his thing, I do my thing. What is the problem? The peace formula. He enjoys with his consorts and with cowherd boys. I've got my scene too. What's the problem? But every material activity for enjoying is based on envy of the Supreme. We want to imitate. The story of material existence is our perverted attempt to imitate Krishna. Now you have to understand what is it that Krishna does. Then you can understand how you're envious of it. And that is the great contribution of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam teaches you about the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Swayam Bhagavan, the original Personality of Godhead. Then you can clearly see why you're in the material world. You can clearly see what you're trying to do in the material world. And you lose your self-created sense of innocence. I'm not so bad. I mean, there are a lot of persons worse than me. I mean, I make a few mistakes from time to time. Everyone does. You know, what do they say? To err is to be human? Yeah, that's right. So I don't follow the regular principles, you know, because, you know, all human beings make mistakes, you know. Sometimes people even criticize you when you try to follow the four rules. They say, that's pride. You think you're better than everyone else because you follow those rules. But real religion means to recognize your fallen nature. Go on being fallen while always crying out to God. That is real religion. But you think you are exempt from sinful activity. You think that you can stop sinning. That is Maya. You must sin. Everyone has sinned. Everyone will sin. You simply believe. That's all. As soon as you think that you can stop sinning, how vain, how proud you have become. So just admit that you are sinning now, you have sinned in the past, and you're going to go on sinning. But that's the way it is. Sounds great, huh? Therefore, no spiritual advancement. Once we understand about Krishna, Krishna's pastimes, then we start to understand what I'm imitating, what I'm trying to do, what is my mission. We're so caught up with that mission that we don't even see how we're failing. How we struggle so much, we work so hard to achieve those goals, just for some temporary little happiness. And when what happens when you get a little temporary happiness? You become so proud. I've got it, I've got it, I've got some temporary happiness. Even while you're rejoicing, the happiness goes. But you don't care. I had it, I had it, I had it. You just get a little bit, one drop of ghee on the fire. And the fire is so heavy. I got a drop on me. There are possibilities in the material world. Sometimes, even our own devotees, they don't like to hear this. Well, if we're always criticizing material enjoyment, how will people be inspired? People are attached to material enjoyment. So we shouldn't be so in their face about the illusion of material enjoyment. But what can we do? Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam are presenting things in that way. What can be done? Someone has to clarify the situation, and that is the greatest mercy. That's the greatest compassion. That's why Krishna says at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Nachasasmana Manusheju, Kashtime Kriya Krishna. No one will ever be more dear to me. No one has ever been more dear to me than the one who explains this knowledge. The complete package of material and spiritual existence. There'll never be anyone more dear to me. If you can help just one person to see the truth of illusion and to see the truth of Krishna, if you can just get one person to do that, how pleased Krishna is. Anyone who is attempting to do outreach work has to deal with rejection. You put your heart and soul into trying to help someone and they just ignore you after a while, or they don't acknowledge your efforts, or even they start to criticize you. It's very painful. And this being rejected causes so many devotees to give up their outreach activity because their heart just burns. I can't believe it. I spent so much time with that person. I gave my life and soul to try to help that person to come out of Maya to Krishna. And now that person just ignores me, or that person criticizes me or rejects me. So many devotees just say, what's the use in doing this outreach if that's the way it's going to be? So we have to learn how to deal with rejection. We have to learn how to deal with the fact that conditioned souls, they are an illusion, and therefore they're going to act in a certain way. Just like parents have to get used to their children not fully appreciating how the parents are working to provide for the children, what do you expect from a 4 or 5 year old to understand the sacrifice that mother and father are making? Going to work, trying to pay for the house, trying to stay together without divorcing. Sometimes they even say that we're just staying together for the sake of the children. But the children, they don't understand that. They don't understand the dynamics that goes on between their mother and father. They just think mother's there, father's there. But as the child gets older, then the child may appreciate. So similarly, as people make some spiritual advancement, they start to appreciate it. So for myself, I've devised a certain formula. Anyone who's ever tried to help me in my spiritual life, I never let them forget it. I always thank that person whenever I see that person. And most of the time this is for things 40 years ago. But still, I don't let them forget.
I always remind them. And that way, when you encourage devotees like that, what happens? They feel inspired to continue helping devotees, to reach out to others.
The converse is also true, that if you don't show any appreciation for those who try to help you, they become discouraged and they stop their preaching efforts. And that's a great victory for Maya. The more outreach persons who can just give up the activity because they're not appreciated, they don't feel any recognition, the better it is for Maya. So anyone who is trying to help devotees, mentoring, counseling, trying to help a spirit soul in any kind of way, you have to get used to sometimes just being ignored, being forgotten about, even being criticized. Oh, it's very painful. But, you know, the maturity works in strange ways, so sometimes even someone you try to help, they'll criticize you. And unless you've learned to be detached, you'll become very discouraged. I can't believe it. I gave my everything to help that Prabhu. And now look how I'm... he or she is going around criticizing me. It's very painful. I've seen so many devotees say, that's it. No more. I'm just going to mind my own business. I'm not helping anyone. Forget all about being a mentor. Forget all about being a book distributor. Forget all about doing outreach. Forget it. It's not worth it. I've got enough problems dealing with myself. I've got to deal with others. Don't even care. Forget it. So, let us please remember that point. That whenever someone has done even something small for you, ages ago, you always thank that person. I remember 40 years ago, when I first came to the temple and you brought me a huge plate of maa. I remember. I told you how I was feeling the first time I visited a temple in New York. I had already been reading Prabhupada's books 4 hours a day for 6 months, but I never visited a temple, gathering, urban yoga, and stuff. Forget it. So finally, after 6 months, I decided to go. I was very nervous. And I approached the temple. I got off the subway and did the 10-minute walk to the temple. And from like 3 blocks away, I could smell the incense in the air. And then as you get closer, you hear the cartels. Very exotic. I never heard such sound before. So then I approached the entrance. I was very nervous. What's going to happen when I open that door? What kind of aliens are going to be there on the other side of the door? Oh, maybe I should turn around and go back. This could be very strange. Why am I doing this in the first place? What am I doing here? So many other things I could be doing on a Sunday. There are football games, baseball games. Later there'll be nightclubs. What am I doing here? I'm like, I'm crazy. So, with great hesitation, I entered into the unknown. I opened the door. And as soon as I opened the door, there was a devotee there who was assigned as his service to be the official greeter for guests. As soon as I opened the door, there he is, this tall, radiant devotee. Welcome, brother. You've come to the right place. Come on in. Take off your shoes. It was winter. Take off your shoes. Go on into the temple room. Move your feet around to the beautiful music. Warm up. So I just completely melted. That was his service. He was given that service to be the official greeter. So as soon as someone opened the door, there he was. Welcome. So whenever I see that devotee, even 4 years later, thank him. Well, thank you so much. So, the super soul realization is intermediate. Yet, the Bhagavatam is talking about it because the Bhagavatam is complete.
Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan iti shabhyate.
So, you've learned in the previous chapter that the Supreme Absolute Truth is spread everywhere, all pervading. You've learned that by considering the universe to be the body of the Lord. Now, in this chapter, you go to the intermediate phase, and you start to hear the details of Paramatma. The full development of consciousness, of course, is realizing you're Krishna's servant. In material life, you don't find any full development of consciousness. In Brahman realization, you don't find the full development of consciousness. Not even in Paramatma realization. But Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas. Once you understand you are Krishna's servant and act in that way, you have reached the pinnacle of development of consciousness. We're hearing the details of the super soul. And these are all spiritual varieties. We're getting trained up to understand that the Supreme Absolute Truth is not void or devoid of qualities, activities, form. So therefore, Shrikadeva Goswami is giving you the details. His mouth expresses his happiness. His eyes spread like the petals of a lotus. And his garments, yellowish like the saffron of a kadamba flower, are bedecked with valuable jewels. His ornaments are all made of gold, set with jewels, and he wears a glowing headdress and earrings. His lotus feet are placed over the worlds of the lotus-like hearts of the great mystics. On his chest is the Kaushubha jewel, engraved with a beautiful calf, and there are other jewels on his shoulders. His complete torso is garlanded with fresh flowers. So what are you going to say about this? Mythology? Some people say that. It's just too detailed. It can't be true. How does Shukadeva Goswami know so much? He must be faking it. No one knows this much. I know that no one knows. It's a contradiction in itself. Just say you don't know and stop talking. But say, I know that no one knows. So even we ourselves may react unconsciously in an impersonal way, hearing these details. Unconsciously, you may just have the reaction, oh, this is a bit over the top, isn't it? His mouth expressing happiness, his eyes spread like the petals of a lotus. I mean, this is too much detail. Is this for real? That shows our envy. We can't tolerate hearing the details of the form of the Supreme Absolute Truth. But we'd love to hear about the details of our form. Right? If men are spending hours at the fitness center building their muscles, and some lady compliments, oh, you look so strong. you feel so great, don't you? And ladies, they spend ages putting on makeup, right? Getting a new hairstyle. And if someone mentions it, don't you feel so good? Oh, you noticed. Now my life is successful. So if someone will notice the details of our existence, that's not mythology. They're very advanced persons. But the details of Krishna's existence, I don't know. Who can be that beautiful? So gradually the Bhagavatam is teaching you about transcendental variegatedness. This is called Advaita Gyan. Real knowledge of non-duality. The impersonalists, the Mayavadis, say that Advaita Gyan means there's no variety on the spiritual platform, and that any time you see variety, it's material. But that is not what the Vedas say. The real knowledge of Advaita Gyan, non-dual knowledge, is that there are varieties on the spiritual platform, but they're not material, they're all spiritual. Therefore, in Krishna's world, there's no difference between pain and pleasure, in that the effect is always eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So Krishna relishes pain, he relishes pleasure. Whereas in the material world, because there's duality, you want the pleasure, you don't want the pain. This is why it's hard to understand the pain of separation that the residents of Vrindavan feel.
I get this question everywhere I go. How could Krishna mistreat the residents of Vrindavan in that way? They're in such anguish. They're about to give up their life. He doesn't come back. How could Krishna do that? Well, when we say like that, we are superimposing our mundane conceptions about variety on Vrindavan. We're not acclimatized to spiritual variedness, the true knowledge of Advaita Jnana, non-dual, non-duality. Therefore, once we become educated in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, we understand that the pain of separation that the residents of Vrindavan are feeling is more ecstatic than when they are seeing Krishna. When Krishna is there, separation is even more ecstatic. But we'll never understand that unless we'll never understand those feelings of separation by the residents of Vrindavan unless first we have a basic understanding of Advaita Jnana, that spiritual variegatedness without any material contamination does exist, separate from material variegatedness. So we have to get over this impersonal tendency in which every time we see variety, we think, oh, it's material. Anytime we encounter variety, immediately, material. And so many persons have this problem. What is this description? His lotus feet, on his chest is a Kaustubha jewel engraved with a beautiful cap. There are other jewels on his shoulders. Well, you know what that's all about. What do the rap music people call it? Bling. We know all that. We know what all that's about. Decorating yourself with diamonds and jewels. But the diamonds and jewels that you find on the body of Paramatma, they are as spiritual as is the body of the Paramatma. So this is how Shukadeva Goswami is educating us. He's taking you through the various levels of realization, from Brahman realization to Paramatma realization, and then he'll, of course, give you the ultimate realization that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda Mahapurushottam. All right, any questions? Yes.
Because you were mentioning that Srimad Bhagavatam is complete, and we also hear that Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripe fruit, and it's nectarian from wherever you buy. So my question is, do the advanced devotees relish description of universal form and creation in second and third canto as much as Vrajabhagavatam?
Sanatana Goswami says that every syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam is saturated with Krishna prema. So someone who's actually advanced, they will relish every syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam. At the same time, they have their particular taste. But having a particular taste for a particular part of, or a particular aspect, or rasa, or Krishna lila, doesn't mean that your appreciation for anything else is reduced. You appreciate everything, but still you have your particular flavor that you like to focus on. That's why sometimes, for example, you know, in Delhi, what's the name of the deities at the big Delhi temple? Radha Parthasar. So sometimes some Vaishnavas of other groups in India, they say, why is your Prabhupada named these deities Radha Parthasarati? Since when is Radha with Krishna as the chariot driver? What was Prabhupada's response? He's seeing Radha and Krishna everywhere. So even though the deity is named Radha Parthasarathi, Krishna the chariot driver, and you may think the chariot driver, Parthasarathi, is always with Arjuna, where's Radha? But someone who's advanced, they're seeing Radha and Krishna everywhere. What do you mean? Krishna's never separate from Radha. It all depends on your vision. What happened when Lord Chaitanya would see Lord Jagannath? Sometimes he would see Lord Jagannath as the supreme majestic Lord. But when he would become lost in his ecstasies of feeling separation, what would he see when he looked at Lord Jagannath? Sakshat Vrajananandana. He would see directly the form of the son of the king of Vrindavan, the son of Nanda Maharaj. So it all depends on your consciousness. What happened when Lord Chaitanya is in Jagannath Puri and he's walking on the beach and he sees a Chatakaparva, the sand dune? He starts running towards it because he sees Govardhan Hill. So everything depends on your vision. Two persons can be looking at the same thing and see completely differently. You come in and see the deities, you immediately bow down. Someone off the street walks in and says, what is this, these statues? What are you bowing on the floor before statues? Idol worship. So everything depends on your consciousness. Bhakti is all about purifying your consciousness. Yes. Serve devotees. Tandara Trani Sevi Bhakti Sanivas. Janame Janame Ayavyas. Birth after birth, we simply want to be humble servants in the society of devotees. It's not always easy living amongst devotees, eh? Sometimes they rub you the wrong way. And then naturally, you start to wonder, oh, when will I have my own place? I don't want to deal with all these persons anymore. I'll just have to go to work every day to pay for it, but that's all right. I'll have my own place and no one will bother me. So, there are times, no doubt, when every devotee feels like, that's just too much, being around so many devotees, that one doesn't understand me. That one 10 years ago said this to me. And But if we always relish the opportunity to serve devotees, we'll rise above those temporary feelings of discomfort. It's the age of Kali. The age of Kali means that social interactions are always problematic. That's especially so about material existence, but even amongst devotees, because devotees are becoming purified. Sometimes they kind of bang each other around a bit too much. Why did you say that? Do you remember what you said? That way you looked at me 20 years ago? Material existence means to blame others. So, either you'll blame devotees, you get married, you blame your husband. That's all part of life. All the married men know. They just get blamed for everything. Who is it? Your old friend, Krishnagarjuna. He's been married for 6 months. So I said to him, how's it going, Krishnagarjuna? His wife was right there. Oh, she blames me for everything. I said, didn't you know that's the way it's going to be? What do you think of this? And she looks at him and says, yeah, right. One story that I get permission before I tell these stories. Satyananda Krishna, he gave me permission. You know, when they had the severe earthquake in Christchurch, and 250 people were killed and so many buildings knocked down. So it was like 4:30 in the morning. So he had gotten up, but his wife was still sleeping. So all of a sudden the whole house starts to shake. It's a serious earthquake. And he hears his voice calling out from the bedroom, "Prabhu, why are you shaking the house? Will you stop that?" "I told you to stop that. Why are you shaking the house?" That's the way it is. So just remember that. Once you change your living situation and you don't have to blame the person in the ashram anymore, then you'll blame your Prabhu. Gotta blame someone. Otherwise life is not worthwhile. You want to get over that? Just engage in service to the devotees and relish that opportunity. Be so thankful for that opportunity. We need devotees in order to hear and chant together. Because by hearing and chanting about Krishna in the association of devotees, the taste, the ruchi increases. The more you realize that you need devotees, the more you'll be tolerant and overlook occasional discrepancies. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, you were talking about how that people read these detailed descriptions, they think it is all mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And we especially see among the youth when they hear about pastimes of Krishna. Like,
which youth?
Like, you know, young people between 15, 20, or 25.
Children of devotees, or?
No.
Okay.
Some children of devotees. They hear pastimes of Krishna lifting the Govardhan hill or dancing on Kaliya, and for those pastimes especially, they think this is all mythology. Like, how can someone lift the Govardhan hill at 7 years of age? And so how do we convince these people about the supernatural pastimes of Krishna?
First, they have to accept that there is a supreme controller, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha. They have to accept that there is a supreme source of all the power. That's why Bhagavad Gita is so important. You have to be basically educated what is the supreme absolute truth. That's why Shukadeva Goswami is taking so much gradual approach. Universal form, Paramatma, all this is going on before the 10th canto, the smiling face of Krishna. This is why Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book is such a masterpiece. He's giving all the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka, but everything is explained with the philosophy. So therefore you're not taking a risk to give someone a Krishna book. I remember my experience first reading Krishna book. I had read the Bhagavad Gita, and my next book was Krishna book. I was reading, I couldn't believe it. This is from another world. And due to educational background, I intuitively understood this is beyond the human capacity to make up. The human brain cannot make this stuff up. I've seen the best human brains, I've studied the best human brains. They could never just speculate or imagine, fabricate what's in Krishna book. So Krishna book presents the leelas of Krishna, but everything is explained. All the leelas are couched in philosophy. And sometimes Prabhupada, you know, he'll put words into Krishna's mouth. Krishna will say, as I've said in Bhagavad Gita. That's his artistic license. Because Krishna book is a summary study, he called it. It's not like a straight translation. He's embellished it for the understanding of others. So he said, summary study means I can do whatever I want. Whereas Bhagavatam is, you know, you have the Devanagari there, the transliteration, the verse, the purport. But Krishna book, Prabhupada, he took the time and effort to couch everything for our understanding, so we wouldn't think that Krishna's pastimes are mythological. So you study how the Krishna book is presented, and you'll also learn how to do the same. Yes? Srimatam Sakata Krishna Punya Shravanakirtana. By hearing about Krishna, the super soul in your heart personally cleanses the desire for material enjoyment. So be eager to always hear about Krishna. Eager to hear your chanting, eager to hear kirtan, eager to hear Bhagavatam class. And particularly if you engage in service. Vasudeva Kataruchi Samahat Sevayavipra. By rendering service to the Maha, to the great soul, you get Kataruchi, the taste for hearing about Vasudeva. Okay? All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.